Welcome to Native America Calling from Studio 49 in Albuquerque. I'm Monica Brain. When United States Representative Charisse Davids was a kid, she talked so much in class that her teacher made her move her desk into the hallway. Today, Davids is using her love of discussion to listen and learn more about the needs of her constituents in her Kansas district. She's one of the first two Native women to be elected to Congress, and she has a new children's book out called Charisse's Big Voice. Representative Charisse Davids is our Native in the Spotlight. We'll be right back.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Work continues on a boarding school project in Rapid City, South Dakota, as discoveries are made of burial sites at former residential schools in Canada. Mike Moen reports.
Almost a decade ago, a volunteer-driven effort was launched to verify details about Native children buried at a former federal boarding school on Rapid City's west side. That research paved the way for an historic agreement with the city to establish parcels of land for Native purposes. Project volunteer Valeria Big Eagle says news out of Canada and the remains of 215 children found there adds an emotional element to the local effort.
We've heard these horror stories of children that were, you know, killed and buried, and we've heard this from our elders, and it's really, really challenging.
New details about the land transfer will be shared at a public meeting this Thursday, including converting some of the property into a Native American community center. That follows a resolution approved by the City Council last fall, acknowledging that tribes were never given a portion of the land long after the school closed. Fellow project volunteer Eric Zimmer notes the non-Native population can share in this experience as well.
What we're talking about doing is undertaking work that sort of raises the quality of life for everyone in the community through a long, careful, deliberate process of trying to understand and respond to the more challenging parts of our history.
And volunteers were recently recognized for their work with an honorable mention in the Outstanding Public History Project Award, issued annually by the National Council on Public History.
That was Mike Moen. Canada has a new Governor General, the Inuk leader Mary Simon. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, she's making history as the first Indigenous person to take on the role of the Queen's representative in Canada.
Simon began her introductory remarks in Inuktitut. She went on to thank both Prime Minister Justin Trudeau and Queen Elizabeth for their confidence in what she described as a very historic opportunity.
This is a moment that I hope all Canadians feel part of, because my appointment reflects our collective progress towards building a more inclusive, just and equitable society.
Simon also becomes Canada's 30th Governor General. The Queen approved the appointment on Trudeau's recommendation.
Canada is a place defined by people who serve those around them, who tackle big challenges with hope and determination, and above all, who never stop working to build a brighter tomorrow. In other words, people like Mary Simon.
Simon is from Nunavik in northern Quebec. She has long been an advocate for Inuit rights and culture. She has also worked with the federal government on several issues, including NAFTA, the repatriation of the Constitution, and the implementation of Canada's first land claims policy. She has also represented Canada as ambassador of circumpolar affairs and as ambassador to Denmark. Simon's appointment comes as the country struggles with reconciliation and as more unmarked graves are discovered across the country on the grounds of former residential schools. It's not clear yet when she will take up her new post. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
The U.S. Postal Service and Sea Alaska Heritage Institute are holding a release ceremony for the Raven Story Stamp on July 30th in Juneau, Alaska. It was designed by Tlingit artist Rico Worrell. The ceremony is public and will be live streamed. The stamp is now available for pre-sale. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support by the Center for Indigenous Cancer Research at Roswell Park Comprehensive Cancer Center, dedicated to cancer research, medicine, and cancer care for Indigenous population. A no-charge online risk assessment tool is available at roswellpark.org/assessme.
This reminder to get your COVID-19 vaccination is provided by the Association of American Indian Physicians and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, who support this show. Info at aaip.org or cdc.gov/coronavirus.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Monica Brain. One November night in 2018, Charisse Davids, a Ho-Chunk lawyer and small business owner, made history. She became one of the first two Native women elected to the United States House of Representatives. We're going to chat with her about her life and career path that led to her serving in Congress. She's covered a lot of firsts in her life. She was a first-generation college student raised by a single mom who served in the Army. Along with Deb Holland, she's one of the first two Native women elected to Congress. And Davids is the first openly gay U.S. representative from Kansas. Today, we'll talk with Representative Davids about her new children's book, Charisse's Big Voice. It's about her own journey growing up and finding her voice to connect with other people. Welcome to Native America Calling, Representative Davids. We're glad to have you here.
Hi, Monica. It's good to be back.
Yeah, it's great to talk with you. I think the last time we talked with you, you were not an elected member of Congress. So we're so happy to have you on the air today. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah. So I really enjoyed this book. I got to learn a lot about your upbringing. Tell us a little bit about, who you were growing up.
Well, I think one of the things that was pretty amazing about doing this project was just kind of taking the time to think about that, actually. And, I think that a lot of times, kids look at grownups and they think, oh, man, they've got it all figured out. I think most of us know that's, just not true. And as a kid, I always felt I talked a lot, which is in the book. I had to learn some lessons from that, like how to listen as well as talk. I was a really high energy kid. In addition to talking a lot, I was like obsessed with Bruce Lee. So I was running around, trying to be a martial artist, even though I'm not sure I knew what that meant at the time. But and then of course, you mentioned it in your kind introduction, is my mom was in the Army for 20 years from before I was born until after I got out of high school. So I did get the chance to live in a few different places, although my mom will joke sometimes that she joined the Army and thought we'd see the world, and we mostly saw Kansas and Missouri. Which is how a Ho-Chunk from Wisconsin ends up in Kansas.
And so what were some of the other places that you got to visit when you were, or go and live when you were a kid?
Yeah, well, we were in Germany for a little while because my mom was stationed there a couple of times. Actually, she was stationed there when I was born. And then she was stationed there when my brothers were born. So I have two little brothers. They're 8 and 9 years younger than me. And, growing up on Army bases, it's funny because even though we were in Germany and I got to see a bit about, German kind of culture and food and the language and that sort of thing, as a 7 or 8 year old, I mostly played with other kids who were from all over the United States, whose parents were stationed there. And then my mom actually got stationed in Korea and was at the base near the demilitarized zone. And so I lived with my cousin in Milwaukee in Wisconsin for a little while. And my brothers lived in Black River Falls, which is where, you know, the Ho-Chunk tribal headquarters is there. And we've got powwow grounds there. And so it was, you know, it was interesting because we lived in Kansas and Missouri and then a little bit overseas.
Your mom didn't want to risk it taking you to near the DMZ?
Oh, I think it wasn't even an option.
Oh.
Because she, when she got stationed there, I think that's an that's interesting because I always say, you know, you don't take your kids when you go to the DMZ. yeah, I think it wasn't even an option. And she worked with the military police when she was there.
You know, I mentioned in the intro that you are a first-generation college student, but I was also reading that you actually call yourself a former first-generation college student because your mom went back and went to college. Tell us about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and actually, just then when you were when we were talking about the my mom getting stationed in Korea, and I was thinking, gee, my mom should write a book.
Yeah.
I've been telling her for years. Yeah, so my mom actually started taking college classes, doing, you know, at that time they called them correspondence courses, I think. And that was like during the time that she was in the Army. And after she got out of the Army, she did a couple of things and then ended up working at the post office. And she just retired from the post office about a month ago. And she, during that whole time, was working on her, you know, coursework. And then she ended up getting an associate's degree, actually, at Johnson County Community College, which is where I also went and got my associate's degree. And then she got her bachelor's degree at the University of Missouri in Kansas City, which is where I got my bachelor's degree. And she studied history. So she was doing that while she was working full time and was also, you know, for a portion of that time, still raising my brothers because they were, you know, they were getting out of high school and going through high school during some of that time, too. My mom is just a very determined person.
She sounds like it.
Yeah.
If you're just joining us today, we are talking with Congresswoman Charisse Davids. She represents Kansas's 3rd District, and she's Ho-Chunk. And she's our native in the spotlight today. If you'd like to chat with her or you have questions for her, give us a call. Phone lines are open. The number is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. So, Representative Davids, what did your mom share with you about the importance of education when you were growing up? And, you know, when you graduated from high school, did you know that you wanted to go to college or did you have other plans?
That's a really good question. You know, my mom, I always felt like my mom gave me the space to kind of learn and be kind of like an autonomous little person growing up, but then, you know, obviously gave me a lot of guidance and that sort of thing. And I didn't find out until years later, but she used to take me to a lot of, she took me to basketball games, like we lived in South Central Missouri near it used to be called SMSU, Southwest Missouri State University. I think it's just called Missouri State University now. But she would take me to the basketball games, the women's basketball games. And years later, she told me that like part of the reason that she took me to those basketball games was so that I could see women who were in college and also you know, playing sports because I was very into sports. I played soccer and tennis and she wasn't explicit about it. She didn't say, I'm taking you to these so you can see people in college. It was just part of like trying to normalize, being on a college campus, like going to, you know, going to places where you see people in college. And then she also would sign me up for camps that with you know, the colleges would put on little soccer camps and tennis camps and that sort of thing. And she told me that later, which I thought was interesting because it did impact and influence my idea about like, oh, well, maybe I can go to this college or maybe I can go to that college without her saying like, you have to go to college because if you don't, you won't be successful. Like my mom never said anything like that to me. And I think it really was very impactful for me. And it's part of when I think about what the, you know, some of the story of the book, it's not, this is not a book about how to run for Congress. You know, this is a book about like taking the things that we're learning along the way and figuring out how they impact what we want success to be for ourselves.
Yeah, that's one of the things I really liked about the book as well, was getting to see, you know, your journey and trying out a few different things as well as eventually, you know, becoming elected. We're going to talk a lot more about that as well as, you know, some other detours in your life and some of the things that you you really wanted to share with folks through this kid's book. And if you're just joining us, Charisse Davids is our native in the spotlight. She is a United States House of Representatives in the United States House of Representatives, and she represents Kansas's 3rd District. And if you'd like to chat with her, give us a call. The number is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. If you'd like to maybe ask her some questions or congratulate her on her success, phone lines are open for you. Give us a call, 1-800-996-2848. One of the things I learned about Representative Davids is that she doesn't like onions on her pizza. And I have to agree with her. I'm not a big fan of onions on pizza either. What about you? Give us a call, 1-800-996-2848. After the break, we're going to talk more about her journey to college and to law school and being a lawyer. And also, we're going to talk a little bit about some of her priorities for the work that she's doing in Congress. So again, your voice is missing from this conversation. We're talking with Charisse Davids, 1-800-996-2848. The discovery of more than 1,000 children's remains at several Catholic Church-run residential schools in Canada has Indigenous leaders demanding a formal apology from the Pope for generations of horrific abuse. It's also sparking discussions about re-examining Native people's relationship with Christianity. That's on the next Native America Calling.
Support by Roswell Park, who know tribal communities face persistent challenges in health equity, such as cancer and higher death rates. The Center for Indigenous Cancer Research at Roswell Park Comprehensive Cancer Center is dedicated to advancing cancer research that will lead to translatable science, medicine, and cancer care for Indigenous populations worldwide. Are you at high risk for cancer? A no-charge online assessment tool is available at roswellpark.org/assessme.
Way, You are listening to Native America Calling. I'm Monica Brain, sitting in for Tara Gatewood. And we are talking with Congresswoman Charisse Davids today. She's our Native in the Spotlight. Before the break, Representative Davids, we were talking a little bit about your childhood and growing up. In your book, you share that sometimes kids would ask you, what are you? And I wonder if you could just share, you know, sort of that experience of talking to your mama about that and coming to understand your tribal identity.
Yeah. So that's actually like, this is one of those stories that it's kind of hard to distill down, especially when you're used to telling stories for pretty much everything. It's hard to distill it down and figure out what stories make sense to be included. But I was pretty intentional about wanting to include this because I feel like there are a lot of people who know what that, maybe not this specific thing, although I have a feeling that I actually call this the mommy, what am I story. I feel like this sort of thing happens to a lot of people, not just Native kids, but a lot of kids, depending on where they're growing up and that sort of thing. But it's part of feeling kind of small or invisible in some ways. And I think a lot of people know what it's like to be the only person like them in a place. So I wanted to include this because it conveys that like we're not alone in those experiences, that people, you know, people feel that way, in their lives. And then the second piece is just, being able to share a bit about kind of both how my mom approached things, you know, like, yeah, I'm going to answer this question, but also make sure that you know that, like, that's not really a nice way to be curious about another person. And then getting the chance to kind of give a little bit of the historic context of why, you know, kids, I might be the only Native kid in a classroom or in a group of friends, and then not even realizing that I, you know, when talking to my mom and, you know, with my aunts and cousins around and all that, like, I think sometimes we don't realize you know, where we're at in a society, because when you're little, it's like you and your family, you know? And so I thought it was really important. And, you know, coming home asking my mom, you know, what am I? And my mom telling me, you know, you're Ho-Chunk, and a bit about the history of removal of Native people from our homelands, and then obviously learning a bit about like Ho-Chunk being known as people of the Big Voice, or in the very, very back of the book, we got the chance to include some historical information about Ho-Chunk Nation and former president of Ho-Chunk, John Greendeer, put some information in there about our language, about our clan system and tribal history and that sort of thing, which I was very, very excited to be able to share that through this book.
Yeah, I think that was one of the things I liked about the book too, is you know, it doesn't go into too much in the actual like body of the book, just sort of talks a little bit about it and shares that story, but that there's this opportunity for more learning and more understanding about people who are like you, you know, or who are different from you, which I think is like the most important thing when it comes to children's books, is being able to both see yourself reflected and also learn something new. We're talking with Charisse Davids. She is a representative for Kansas's 3rd District and one of, now two Native women in Congress. And if you want to talk with her, give us a call. The number is 1-800-996-2848. Let's take a call. We've got Aaron in Albuquerque tuned in on KUNM. Hey there, Aaron.
Hi there.
Hi. What would you like to share today?
Hi. I was just wondering how you feel about Deb Haaland being Secretary of the Interior and what you think she can do for Native communities here in the U.S.
Go ahead, Charisse.
Excited about it. Yeah, I'm really excited about now Secretary Haaland. I will say that it was a little bit bittersweet when she got appointed, only because for a lot of the first term, her and I would do events together and go to things, and I would often tell people, like, I don't know how I would do this experience without Deb here with me, and now she's not in the house anymore. turns out I can manage it, but so it was bittersweet just because her and I are such good friends, and now we have to really plan out how we're gonna hang out and see each other and that sort of thing. But on the other side of it, I do, I think that when her and I got elected in 2018, I didn't really get to experience some of the kind of collective joy and happiness that came along with the kind of historical nature of our elections. But when she got appointed to run the Department of Interior, both nominated and then confirmed and then got sworn in, I felt like I could experience a little bit of like what Indian Country was experiencing when she got sworn in, and it's pretty phenomenal. And so there's that piece of it, because there's definitely a very personal aspect of anything that happens with Deb, because she's like my sister, and then I think that like the impacts of having Deb Haaland as our Secretary of Interior, not just for Indian Country, but for actually for our planet, because of the role that the Interior Department plays in conservation and land management. The federal government has millions of acres of land that come under the purview of the Department of Interior. And I think that her approach of stewardship of the land is going to be really, really impactful for that. And then for Indian Country, having somebody who really understands what sovereignty means, what a government-to-government relationship has looked like and can look like and should look like, combined with her, she's a lawyer. She went to law school. She understands these issues and policies in a way that no other Interior Secretary has before with her, from her perspective, if that makes sense. So I think that it's just going to be so impactful for generations, and I don't even know that we're going to really truly understand it during our lifetimes, just how impactful it's going to be.
Thanks, Aaron. Representative Davids, do you ever worry, though, that you might find yourself like on opposite sides of her? Maybe, some sort of issue that Interior takes up with the state of Kansas?
That's an interesting question. I don't know that I would say I worry about it. I always tell people I'm a very pragmatic person. Some of the ways that I think about things is not if it'll happen, but when. And that's with a lot of things, because we can hope for the best, but plan for contingencies, and when it comes to Secretary Haaland is also a
raised in a military family. In some ways, I think you can tell with both of us the level of responsibility and duty that we feel toward, toward our constituencies, toward the, the oath that we take when we come into the offices that we're in, that we're both going to be always trying to do what's best for the country, for Indian country, for the role that we're in, and if we happen to be on the in different places on an issue or something, that just means that our offices and our roles, require, so we just try to figure that out.
Yeah. In a cordial way. I'm curious, Representative Davids, if you might talk about the differences between the two administrations, transitioning, like how things are different now with the Biden administration versus the Trump administration.
That's a really good question. And, I think that I'm just at the beginning of, I'm in my second term, and I'm just at the beginning of it. And the difference that I can see so far has a lot to do with the level of engagement that this president has had, because we're talking kind of a lot about Native stuff in Indian country. That's the first thing that I would highlight is just President Biden's commitment to, he didn't only appoint Deb Haaland for purposes of having a Native in the cabinet. Like, she's obviously skilled and knows what she's doing, but he's done so many other things that make Deb's appointment just one data point in his effort to try to make sure that we truly have a government-to-government relationship with the federal government and tribal governments. And I think that there's been, a lot of, as part of the LGBTQ plus community, I would say that, the efforts to make sure that LGBTQ and Two-Spirit folks aren't being discriminated against, I've appreciated those efforts. And then, I'm on transportation and infrastructure as one of my committees, and getting the chance to really dig into and work on getting an infrastructure, getting some infrastructure done is going to be really helpful. And I'll say that there has been, I might be preaching to the choir here, but definitely the need to have some robust infrastructure investments in Indian country is, I don't know that we can overstate the importance of that.
Yeah, I think that the pandemic has really sort of laid bare the infrastructure issues, that whether it's access to internet or just having running water. Yeah.
Proper funding for IHS. I mean, like so many different things.
Absolutely. Let's take a few more calls. We've got Congresswoman Charisse Davids on the line today. She's our Native in the Spotlight, and there's still time if you want to chat with her. Give us a call, 1-800-996-2848. Let's go to Gary in Albuquerque, tuned in on KUNM. Hey there, Gary.
Hello.
And what are you thinking about?
Hello?
Go ahead.
I'm probably not the most, politically savvy person. I know there's a lot of people that know, citizens that know how to navigate the political landscape really well. And for me, it's sometimes hard to know, who to trust. And so you hear politicians who promise this or that, but sometimes it's difficult to sort of decipher what's going on. And it's just wondering your feelings of how, because I know I'm not the only person in this position, how, we're supposed to sort of look at what's going on in politics and separate the bull from what's important and what's real.
Oh, Gary, that's such a great question. Representative Davids, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a couple of things that are super important, especially these days. One is like figuring out kind of where to get information from. You know, I mean, I think that that's one of the things that we, because there's so much information out there, like never in human history have we had access to the amount of information that we have access to now. And I think that, you know, for me, one of the things that I always do is, and this is probably maybe my mom instilled this in me as well, I'm not sure, but I always ask the question, for what purpose? And that's with all kinds of things, including like for what purpose is this information being is this information being shared? And you know, who is the information coming from, and that sort of thing. And I think that being able to find the people, and it, that can be, you know, it could be an elected official, or it could be you know, somebody in your community that you're like, hey, that person thinks through a lot of stuff, and you know, asking lots of questions is usually the approach that I take. But you know, I do think that the more individual relationships we can build up with people, it will help us with some of the stuff that's hard to decipher right now. And I think about that from the perspective of how the pandemic, and Monica, you kind of mentioned the impact that the pandemic has had. You know, it exacerbated a lot of issues, including access to things like broadband. You know, some people are getting overloaded with information, and some people are getting no information. And so for those of us who have the ability to help point folks in a good direction, I think some of us have a responsibility to do that. And then for the folks who are looking for information, just asking tons of questions of people. Mm-hmm. because I think, you know, like my office, we tried to really make sure that we were sharing kind of, you know, here's where testing sites are. Right. Here's where folks can get their vaccine.
Right. And hang on one second, Congresswoman Davids. We're going to go to a short break, but I want to talk more about that, about the conspiracy of COVID.
Support by Southwestern Indian Polytechnic Institute's Early Childhood Education Program, providing an affordable pathway for the next generation of Native teachers who will meet the unique educational needs of Native students. SIPI's Early Childhood Education Associate's degree is an all-inclusive program with mentorship for success in education in an intertribal learning community. Information and application at sipi.edu under Academics, then Programs. Summer application deadline is April 10th.
Thank you. You're listening to Native America Calling. I'm Monica Brain, sitting in for Tara Gatewood. And we're talking with Congresswoman Charisse Davids. She's our Native in the Spotlight today. And Congresswoman Davids, before the break, you were talking a little bit about like how we can know who to trust in politics. And you were starting to mention a little bit about just, you know, at the beginning of the pandemic, being able to put out that good, reliable, truthful information about what was going on. Anything you want to add to that? I'm particularly curious, you know, if you had to interact with constituents who were, you know, calling and saying they thought this was a hoax or things like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so. Yes, there's been absolutely, you know, I don't want it to seem like I think some concerns and hesitancy or, you know, like there is a long, long history that we have in our country, particularly as like Native people of in some ways, I think one of the ways that we try to keep safe is by saying like, wait a minute. Who's telling me this and how, like, just trying to figure out who to believe and who to trust.
Right. What am I signing here?
Which is, yeah, what is this paper? And so I do think that there are some things that I know I have experienced growing up that have influenced that stuff. In fact, you know, I'm one of the things that in the book, it's kind of funny, actually, how much of the person I am, I was able to fit into this book. But there's a portion where I talk about going to law school, you know, and like so much of that process, like I didn't know any lawyers growing up. And then I started to learn more and more as I was going through school. As I started to learn about things like treaties, about the ways that Native people, the history, like the legal history of Native people in this country and all of that sort of thing, like I always try to keep in mind that we have to, and this is me now as an elected, right? We have to make sure we're meeting people where they're at. We have to make sure that, you know, if I say, here's where you can go, get a COVID test or a vaccine, and the response has something to do more with like a lack of trust. That's not necessarily about the COVID vaccine or the COVID pandemic. That has more to do with, you know, how as the people's government are we making sure that the people can trust what's going on? And I think to me that is a huge, huge issue. That we have to be thoughtful about. And it's one of the reasons that anytime when I'm talking to folks, and you're absolutely right, I heard from people who, you know, when I got my vaccine, quite a few people reached out to me and said, like, tell me what happens, or are you sure we should be doing this and that sort of thing. And you know, the only thing I can do is let folks know why I did it. That I, you know, the vaccine's safe and effective. I encouraged my mom to get it, you know, so that people know that, like I'm here to tell you, and share with you and have a real conversation about this stuff. I'm not just saying something and then walking away, which I think is what has been a lot of people's experience, particularly in Indian country when we have, you know, a long history of seeing a very, what I consider to be a very a strong feeling of paternalism, you know, and it's written into some of the laws and some of the treaties. And so trying to make sure that we're addressing that for people is really important.
Mm-hmm. Let's take a call. If you want to talk to Representative Charisse Davids, there's still time. Give us a call. The number is 1-800-996-2848. We've got Mark in Net Lake. on the Boyce Fort Reservation in Minnesota, tuned in on KBFT. Hey there, Mark. Thanks for waiting. What would you like to share?
I'm more of the, you know, what, you know, when she's on a talk with the Democrat and, you know, the policy views her appropriations, federal appropriations on, for, you know, like health and human services, you know, people with alcohol addiction, drug addiction, you know, natives that are, I mean, that's a lot.
Okay.
And, you know, what does she, how does she vote on those appropriations?
Okay.
To request more, because we would do, like, National Congress, American Indians, we would try to get more appropriations for those types of programs.
Okay, Mark, thanks. We had a little bit of a problem with his line there, but I think what he's asking about is, you know, what your priorities are in terms of alcohol addiction or addictions in general. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think I heard a little bit of maybe Mark might have mentioned something about making sure that there's funding available for IHS or I also was having a hard time hearing IHS or HHS, but a couple of things I want to mention are that we have there's a group of us that's been pushing to make sure that we've got the funding necessary for Indian Health Service, for IHS, and doing that in a way that makes it so if there's a government shutdown or anything that funding is not interrupted because. For so many reasons, but the federal government trust responsibility is one of the main reasons that we need to do that. And I've been working with some of my colleagues. Tom Cole is, he's actually on the other side of the aisle, and him and I have both been working together to try to make sure that we can get IHS funding done in the way that it needs to be. So that's one piece, is just making sure that the resources are there. And then being supportive of, you know, organizations within the federal government that do the grant making, that do the research, you know, whether we're talking about SAMHSA or the NIH work that's happening. And then the other thing is just making sure that, you know, I talk a lot about trauma-informed care. I think that when we think about how we take care of ourselves and how we take care of each other as communities, the level of trauma that that we are experiencing, and you know, this is true in Native communities, but it's also just, I mean, we're all in the middle of living through. Losing friends and loved ones to a pandemic that has changed every aspect of our lives. This is a traumatic time to be alive. And that's stacked on top of everything else that was already, you know, very hard. And so I think that from my perspective, from my office perspective, making sure that we're thinking about those things and how we take care of each other is really, really important.
Absolutely. When you think about, when you're talking about funding for IHS, are you hoping for just like a fix if there's a problem or if there's a shutdown, or a more encompassing like forward funding IHS, like the way that they do with the veterans?
Pushing for the forward funding, advanced appropriations. There's a number of ways that people talk about it, but making sure that funding is there ahead of time. And the Veterans Affairs is actually a really great example that I'm glad you brought up, because that is what we've been pushing for and we're working on.
Speaking of Veterans Affairs, I mean, I know that that's probably an issue that's near and dear to your heart. Are there any priorities that you have in terms of helping veterans?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually, that's a good, you know, it is near and dear to my heart. I know we kind of already talked about my mom a little bit, that she
was in the Army for 20 years from before I was born until after I got out of high school. And there's just a strong history and legacy with the Ho-Chunk people, of course, but actually a lot of tribes, you know, Native people serve as service members at the highest rate of any other group in this country. And so I think because I know more about what that experience is like and what, you know, exiting as a service member can be like for folks, it has been a huge priority in my office. In fact, we have somebody on our team who's a Wounded Warrior Fellow. So he served in Iraq and Afghanistan, and is he's been in our office, and he handles the work with veterans. And a lot of times it's just so hard sometimes to navigate the bureaucracy. And if one thing goes wrong, it can take years to figure out sometimes because it's so complicated. So we have somebody dedicated on our team to making sure that, you know, we're trying to help address those kinds of issues. And then for, you know, policy or legislation, we're trying to make sure that the services that are available are known to veterans. In fact, I introduced a bill called the SERVE Act to try to make sure that that veterans have access to and awareness of all of the entrepreneurial resources that are there, because, you know, I think that Native people are very entrepreneurial in general, and have had to be for a long time. But going into the service, you learn leadership skills, you learn problem solving, a fortitude, and that sort of thing. Like, who better to be entrepreneurs than our veterans? And so just trying to figure out ways to make sure we're being supportive there.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's take a call. We've got Michelle in Albuquerque tuned in on KUNM. Hey there, Michelle.
Hi, good morning. I'd like to thank you for your outstanding service and your ability to think broadly and more than just your state that you represent. So thank you very much. I do have a question. Are there instances in which Indigenous peoples who serve in the U.S. House of Representatives, such as Yvette Harrell from New Mexico, who I guess is Cherokee. I was wondering on that point, are you able to work together on issues that affect Indigenous peoples, or does partisan politics prevent that from happening? And I'm going to get off the line and hear your answer.
Oh, yeah. So that's a really great question, Michelle. And I think that one of the things I'll point to is the pre-funding or advanced appropriations for Indian Health Service. That's actually been something that, in a bipartisan way, we've been pushing for that. And actually, that started before I got to Congress. But I've been working with Tom Cole, who's a representative from Oklahoma, and the most senior. Of all of us natives in the Congress right now. And then Mark Wayne Mullen is another one. So because of the pandemic, things have, you know, it's been an interesting thing, because usually we see each other on the House floor, so we don't see each other as much. But Tom Cole and Mark Wayne Mullen were both in Congress last time, or last session, and I got to work with them on a number of issues, healthcare issues, foster care and adoption issues, which I think, we could have a whole hour long thing about foster care and adoption issues, and then a 10-hour conversation on the radio about what predated that with the boarding school issues that were like, becoming a more mainstream conversation. We know that's been a conversation in Indian country for a long time. But yeah, there's been plenty of murdered and missing Indigenous women and people issues, or something that we come together in a bipartisan way to work on.
And so I think that this is one of the brighter points we can point to of bipartisanship, is that for issues, for the most part, issues in Indian country we're able to get bipartisan support.
Well, we're just wrapping up now, Representative Davids. What do you want kids to take away from your book, Charisse's Big Voice?
Well, I'd say there are probably three big picture things. One is, I just hope that that kids can see that there's a lot of there's twists and turns and ups and downs and all of that, and obstacles. Like some of us have more obstacles than others, but everybody has some obstacles, and that there's a lot of power in learning to use your big voice, learning to listen, and I think that's important. And then it's also important to recognize that we get to decide what success means for ourselves. You know, that's why I say this, Charisse's Big Voice is not a book about how to become a member of Congress. I just hope that people can see that, you know, we get to decide what success means for ourselves, and that we all deserve to be seen and heard, because too many of us, when we're little and when we grow up, know what it's like to feel small or invisible, or ignored, and all our young people deserve to be seen and heard.
I love it. Thank you so much, Representative Charisse Davids, for joining us today. We're back tomorrow. We're going to have a conversation about Christianity in Native America. I'm senior producer Monica Brain. Have a good one.
Are you a Native American entrepreneur? Have a business solution for an issue like COVID recovery or green energy? The Indian Loan Guarantee and Insurance Program is a federal program helping private lenders make the business loan you need. They support most businesses, whether starting up or expanding. Information available by emailing dci@bia.gov. That's dci@bia.gov. The Division of Capital Investment supports this show.
Au lukaan mikilnguk atuguyuk kainik aknihtaiskut pikan khtsku salimut suutun khtsuku pakasgu insurekidsnow.gov khasukayagagulku 1-877-KIDS-NOW unakingunang khtuk ukunuk Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davids. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.